In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump, we all shall be changed. The earthly must put on the heavenly, the corruptible must put on incorruption. And neither height, nor depth, nor angels, nor principalities, nor things seen or unseen shall ever separate us from the love of God.
This is the When You Die podcast. If it has to do with death and dying, we're talking about it. I'm Johanna Lund, your host. With me today is Dale Jackson, a licensed embalmer and funeral director with 46 years of experience and counting. Welcome, Dale, and thank you for joining me.
I don't often talk about myself, so
That's good to do that.
But it's been a profession for me in those 46 years of serving those in a time of need when folks are most vulnerable. We've just lost someone near and dear to us, and the ability to maybe to help people through the most difficult times of their lives is a great gift and a blessing.
Well, it's good. Really, you think the first time you're meeting someone, they're in crisis.
Exactly. And not everyone is able to approach someone in a state of duress, succumbed by the loss of someone near and dear to them. But it's been a great gift, and it's been very rewarding over those years. Developed some great professional liaisons with folks, and when folks are appreciative for what you're trying to do to help them through this difficult time, it's been rewarding, I guess, is the way. And they feel blessed to have been able to have someone take them by the hand, lead them through these difficulties. When a death occurs, suddenly we have a problem. We have a body. What do we do? Where do we go? How? Who, what, when, where? What goes on? For those who haven't had the discussion at the dinner table, usually when it comes to death and dying, oh, we don't talk about that here. And it's shoved under the dinner table. And unfortunately, it becomes a burden to those who haven't gone through that discussion prior to being faced with it.
Well, how do you lead someone through when they haven't talked about it? Because death has been a pretty taboo subject in the last 50, 80 years, yeah. Really.
You make them aware of what is available, because they're looking for some guidance. They may ask for cremation. And so we lead them through the different venues. Cremation is the end result, but there are many ways to achieve that. Is it immediate cremation, no visitation or viewing? The ashes are returned, the family pick them up. Is it cremation where there is a visitation and viewing, traditional funeral service, then cremation, and then subsequent burial of one's ashes or interment in a vault or niche, or family are going to pick the cremated remains up and take them, for example, to some place meaningful to them. I've had families say, no, we're going to pick them up, we're going to do our own thing. And I'd say, well, the only thing is with that, would you consider if there's a family burial plot somewhere that maybe a portion of those cremated remains could be interred with maybe a parent or a grandparent or a relative, so that a monument, even a flat marker with their name, could be placed in the ground to show that they've lived, breathed, they've lived here, worked here, and they were actually in existence here as a human being. Whereas if you pick them up, you scatter somewhere, cemeteries are designed such that you just can't place a monument here, there, or anywhere to acknowledge the person or loved one has actually been here. I've had several families say, it's so nice that we do have the family cemetery that we can go visit at any time. And for our generations that have followed, they can connect to their roots. And they have that connection, I am who I am because of. Whereas families who do not have that genealogy, if you will, find somewhat difficulty.
And do you think it's for the first generation or the second? Or I think in a way we're kind of moving into that space about how ritual helps us to move forward, right? So whether there's a ceremony or not, where the ashes or the body may lie. I mean, I guess cremation is an increasingly popular option right now.
Yes. When I started in funeral service back close to 50 years ago, if we were contacted, there was a death in the family, and called upon to serve, it was automatic. Traditional embalming, visitation, viewing, traditional service, followed by traditional burial, casket and body. Today, when the phone rings, we hold until the family come to notice as to what direction they wish to proceed. But as I'd mentioned earlier, you kind of take them by the hand, allow the different options that are available to them and from which they can make their selection and choose what would be best for their particular need, then we would proceed with their wants. I had a situation in which a death occurred of a student, and the dad came in wanting cremation. I want cremation. I will come in and pick the ashes up after cremation is completed, and that's what I want. So I guess with the guidance, I said, well, she was a student, yes. And so she was active in school. Oh, yes, she was, you know, on this team and that team and cheerleader and so on. And I said, well, have you considered that there are others outside your family unit who are considered extended family, who have a connection and they've known, you know, them their whole lives, right from kindergarten right through? And I said, there are stories there that will be lost forever if they're denied an opportunity to express these connections. And I think you need to hear those. And you can give them that opportunity. If, for example, you have a visitation with maybe her urn present, you could have her uniforms from sports, a pictorial collage, a video of family photos, and from there arrange to have a tribute in her memory to show a life lived. Her life did have meaning, and you need that for closure. Are you prepared for the next 6 months, 8 months at the post office, at the mall, at the grocery store, people coming up because they were denied that opportunity? Are you prepared to receive the condolences at that time, scattered out over months? I'm so sorry, I didn't have a chance to see you. But if you have, for example, a visitation from in an afternoon, 2 to 4, and maybe an evening from 6 to 8, to allow community to come and share with you this expression of their love for them and share these stories that will be lost forever. I said, you need that. He was kind of, how can I say, somewhat set back by this. I could tell he hadn't really thought things through. And then family members said, you listen to this man. He knows what he's talking about. You consider what he's saying. He agreed to do that. It was advertised. The greeting would be there for folks who wished to come and pay their respects. There were close to 2,000 students, teachers, friends of the family. They came on that one day. It was nonstop. When it was over, he came to me with tears in his eyes and he said, Dale, I thought I knew what I wanted, but you knew what I needed. And he said, I don't know how to thank you.
We don't really know how to grieve anymore. Yeah. And it's so painful to lose a child, to lose your partner, to lose a good friend. It's really easy to just say, I want out of here. I don't want anything to do with
it.
You've been in that business of helping people to take that step into healthy grieving in a way, isn't it?
We all grieve in different ways, and everyone's affected in different ways. Some because of not having the base or the knowledge. I hate using the word ignorance, but if you're not exposed to these things through your childhood right up and become involved in a family gathering, as we do for when there's a baptism or a birthday or holiday events, everybody's included. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to a death in the family, often younger ones are the ones that are out of the parents' ignorance. Well, we're not going to expose them to this because this is too heartbreaking. And but the meaning of doing so is kind, but the long-term effects, the child suddenly feels, well, I'm not invited. I'm not going to this. I guess grandpa didn't love me or grandma didn't really like me, so that's why I'm not included. But yet they see this as an event, as the birthday party, the Christmas turkey dinner or this type of thing. So often they, through the eyes of a child, view things differently than a parent.
Mm-hmm.
When a death occurs, that's part of our natural process, as to be born is to die. But the reality is we feel quite comfortable with where we are now in this body. And it's hard to visualize other than that. So therefore, it's hard for people to understand that it continues. I have a great belief it just does not stop here. I had an experience as a child where I actually left this body and I went to the other side, if you will. And this is no drugs or alcohol. This was just one of those. I accidentally choked. And I actually was suffocating. And I had left this physical. And I had appeared. And I can still remember the travels. And I went to another place. And it was very similar to here. It was in a meadow, actually, as crazy as this sounds. But length, width, and height is three-dimensional is what we have here. Right. What I saw was length, width, and height, but there was another dimension added to it. Everything was four-dimensional. I didn't see any people. I can still remember that. It was bright and sunny, really golden and beautiful, calm, peaceful. And then suddenly that was behind me, and I was traveling literally through space, and I could see in the distance around with a corona around it. This was at night, and I was focusing towards this, and I believe what it was the earth. And then eventually it got closer and closer, and I can still remember coming down and seeing my town from above, and then kind of just honing into the family home where all this was going on. And I can still remember going through the roof, through the ceiling, and seeing myself laying there. And then I hit my physical body, and there was like a a big breath, and suddenly I was locked in.
Wow.
And that's through the eyes of a child. Now, later on, my dad said, you know, we'll pay for everything, go through med school. By accident, I kind of just fell into studying the 3 years mortuary science. And
well, I was going to ask you if having had that experience, if it, you know,
influenced?
Kind of, yeah, if it influenced that.
I have no fear whatsoever of when I play my last trump, if you will, and take my last breath. I have no fear whatsoever of the next step.
What a gift that is.
And it is. It's a calming reassurance, I guess, if you will. And having attended as a funeral director, either assisted or conducted, probably easily well over 10,000 funerals in my lifetime, and having been exposed to the liturgies of the different religions and the beliefs, there's one passage from the Bible that I can relate to, and it is, in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump, we all shall be changed. The earthly must put on the heavenly, the corruptible must put on incorruption, and neither height nor depth nor angels nor principalities nor things seen or unseen shall ever separate us from the love of God. That I could relate to the experience that I had. It makes sense to me.
Well, you experienced this.
Firsthand.
So
yeah.
That's not hearsay or story. That's a pretty direct knowing, eh?
Yeah, definitely. And it's comforting. As strong and as strong beliefs that you have, to feel the loss of someone and to acknowledge it's hard to say goodbye for the final time, that's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a young family, they had just lost their infant. I said, you've had the baby shower, you've set up your crib, new trimmings for the little one in the baby's room, your first one. I said, suddenly this has all been pulled out like the rug out from under you. And I said, Mom, you're looking at Dad saying, you know, what was wrong with you? And Dad, you're looking at Mom saying, well, you know, was there something wrong with Mom? And I said, I can tell you there's nothing wrong with either one of you. It's one of those things you're going to beat yourselves up if you try looking for answers, because you'll never find an answer for that. There is no answer. I said, I've been through it. I know what I'm talking about. But I said, you can search for something that is not there and drive yourself crazy. I said, you will not find the answer to that. But you can give each other the support that you need.
Mm-hmm.
Comfort each other. And don't give up.
Mm-hmm.
I said, we were blessed after our first miscarriage. We were blessed with the little fella. And I said, you know, that was like raising 10. And if you really want one, I've got one I will give you. The parents looked at me. They burst out laughing. And they have been under duress for the last days and days. They finally smiled. Then they realized. I said, don't give up. You cannot find the answer, but you have to accept it and move on.
Humor is a real healing gift, isn't it?
It helped me too in that process of taking them by the hand and leading them through to the process. And it was over a year later, I got a phone call at work. And they said, Dale, we had to call you. We just had a little boy. We named him Dale. I remember them saying at the hospital, we never had anybody talk to us like this. on our level. It was always, you know, sort of a different level.
A little more clinical, maybe, a little more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was more human, if you will, and they could relate to that. So there was that bond and that trust established.
You are not at all immune to the pain and suffering of the people that come to you. It sounds like you're very much in the trenches in an honest and direct kind of way.
As a human being,
yeah.
Now I can look back and say I'm the patriarch of my family. There were six in our family plus my parents. I'm the last of those. I've witnessed, you know, all those funerals over the years. No aunts, no uncles, no grandparents. They're all gone. When holidays come, I can see where families, you know, somewhat take a step back and reminisce and say, oh, if it only was like it used to be.
Right, right.
And it's no longer. You have to step up to the plate and say, I cherish those memories.
Yes.
And I'll hold them near and dear.
Yes.
And I'll never let go.
Yeah.
And to help sustain you. And I've often said to families, too, you can spend all your time driving a car, looking in the rearview mirror, and where's the car going to go? Or you can put your focus where I'm going and reflect in the rearview mirror now and then, because it keeps you on track. At the same time, it gives you that guidance based on your previous experiences to help you through.
When people are coming to you, say a loved one hasn't just died.
Yes.
But they're being proactive and they're looking out for their future. They want to make arrangements in advance.
Yes.
What do they ask you?
They ask, well, one of the things, if mom or dad is in a nursing home 100 miles away, but they lived here their whole life, but if they die there, can we make arrangements with you to facilitate looking after everything? And of which the answer is yes. We would do the transfer of the remains from place of death and bring them into our care. One has to realize that when a death occurs, people sometimes say, oh, mom or dad just died at home. Would you please come? Our first question is, has the doctor been notified? We cannot just process our staff or vehicles to go to a home unless there is the guarantee of a death certificate. That is the funeral director's go-ahead, if you will, that he is able to proceed. In the event of a terminal illness, then often hospice, their staff at the home will notify or hospice that the death has occurred at home. So then often the doctors at hospice, with great knowledge of the person's medical history, are able to write the death certificate. And we, with that permission, we'll do the transfer, and then we'll secure the death certificate, for example, the next day. But again, we have to be guaranteed, or it has to be acknowledged, yes, Dr. So-and-so will sign, and it's okay to do that do that transfer. It eliminates any misgivings, if you will, as to the cause of death or the circumstances around the death.
I think it helps all of us, not just myself, really understand a little bit more about what happens when you die.
As a funeral director, tanenthologist, mortician, undertaker, all those words, I guess, theoretically mean the same thing. We have a deeper appreciation, or I have a deeper appreciation for life itself and the things that are important in life. Those family and friends, that's what life's about, and helping each other. We're all in it together, and we're all here to help each other, and that's what the true meaning of life is. I appreciate your time. Hopefully we didn't go off on too many tangents.
I think it's rich and good, and thank you for what you do, too.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
This conversation is brought to you by the When You Die Project. From existential afterlife questions to palliative care and the nuts and bolts of green burial, if it has to do with death, we're talking about it. WhenYouDie.org.